got some NFL music. That means we're getting set to talk some NFL. Almost nobody we'd rather talk to here on this Wednesday afternoon than Greg Rosenthal of the NFL Network and NFL.com. You can follow Greg on the Twitter at Greg, G-R-E-G-G Rosenthal. He is a podcast host. He's an excellent analyst, insider, and he joins us today on Extra 1360. Greg, it's Darren. Do we do a good enough job buttering you up and thanking you for making yourself available today?
I think you could have done better. You did say almost anyone we could talk to, like we would look forward to talking to Greg. So it just made me think, like, well, who's higher on the list?
Who would be higher on the list for you? Who would you rather hear from than Greg Rosenthal? If I were asking Greg Rosenthal to be self-analytical, who would you rather hear today other than yourself?
Okay, it's draft season, so I'm not going to pretend I'm like the number one draft expert. Who's good at that? You know who's good at it? An up-and-comer, JT O'Sullivan. I like his YouTube stuff, Nate Tice. I'm going to give some draft guys a little under the radar.
Okay.
Value. There's a couple guys for you.
Now, who's that again? What's his name? Because Marty's going to book him immediately.
JT O'Sullivan, his YouTube videos are good. And then Nate Tice, Mike Tice's son, who used to play too, who's over at The Athletic. Both good guys.
Are you a draft guy? You get into the draft? Do you really like roll up your sleeves? You come up with mock drafts, things like that, trade scenarios?
No, I realize there's so many good people. I should have mentioned Daniel Jeremiah, by the way. We're going to have him on our podcast this week, and he's the best, despite some of my dust-ups with him. I realize there's so many people who know it so well that I definitely am a crammer at the last minute, but I kind of look at what do the teams need? Like, who fits where? Because it seems like, to me, after watching the draft so much, it's like, whether you're a bust or not, almost like depends more on where you get drafted and if it's the right place for you than anything else. I try to know those rosters and what they need the best.
Right. So like we can talk a little bit about a guy like Sam Darnold, where you get drafted, what a roster looks like, who might be the head coach there. These are all variables that very much matter when we're analyzing how it is that a player performs at the next level.
Absolutely. Darnold is a really fascinating case because he's a guy so many people thought was not just the best quarterback that year, but one of the better quarterbacks, in a few years. That's how much potential he had. And he's been terrible, really, based on his production. And I do think there's a difference between a guy like Darnold and what you hope like he's going to turn into. Like, you can blame a lot on the surroundings. But don't you feel like if he was Justin Herbert, he would have been Justin Herbert? He had 3 years. Or if he was Patrick Mahomes or just, any other good young quarterback, Deshaun Watson, in terms of his play on the field, like, wouldn't he have shown a little more in those 3 years? So it's a balancing act, but I don't know if anyone would have been a superstar under Adam Gase. That's true.
Yeah, that's where I am on this. And I realize this is it sort of becomes binary, right? Like, is it, and the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. But I'm much more of the opinion, having grown up not too far away from the Meadowlands, that this very much could be pinned on the Jets. This could be pinned on that organizational history. And this very much could be pinned on that head coach. And I'm going to operate with the Ryan Tannehill theorem here, that Darnold is going to be much better just escaping the combination of the Jets and Adam Gase moving forward.
I agree with you. But Tannehill, I think, is a good example because he showed a lot to me as a rookie. I watched every one of his snaps in Miami. He was an average starting quarterback really from the jump, and he didn't improve. And Darnold's been well below that. So my expectations, him going to Carolina, I think that was a great landing spot. I love what Matt Rhule has been doing as an offensive play caller. I like the price they gave up for him too. It just wasn't much, and you got to keep taking swings. But to me, the upside has to be lowered of what you expected when he could come out. Like, I think he could, be groomed into an above average quarterback, a solid starting quarterback, a Derek Carr type, whatever it's going to be. But to me, he's played enough that like Tannehill is the upside now. Whereas when he was coming out, you thought he could be a lot better than that.
Right. I agree. And I openly admit that this is a very simpleton approach for me, that it's easy to blame them and it's easy to blame him. But right, there's been enough there on Sam Darnold. He doesn't get a complete pass, does he? As you just said, is his ceiling at this point is Derek Carr?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's optimistic. Derek Carr's another player who showed more, I think, in his first 3 years. Here's why I'm not that huge on Darnold, because I went back and like restudied him last offseason, and I watched him a lot last year too. And he just misses a lot of throws. I'm not one of these quarterback gurus, but it's just like accuracy is the most important thing. And the offensive line was terrible and different things were terrible, but there were, you can isolate a lot of plays where he was protected perfectly, and the ball doesn't go where he aims it. And that's like the number one, that's the number one thing.
It's kind of a problem.
I really like Justin Fields. Yeah, that's a problem. It's one of the reasons I like Fields, that like, yeah, you can pick out some problems with Justin Fields here or there, but like he might be the most accurate of all these quarterbacks. And to me, it's like, okay, well, then you can work with something if you can throw the ball where you aim it.
You said you liked the landing spot for Darnold. What did you think of the compensation of a 6-round pick, a second, and a fourth?
I thought it was, you know, it was fair for everyone. I think the Jets did well to get that much. I think the Panthers taking a swing on another young quarterback for a second round pick that's not even this year, like, I'll do it, because to me, you almost can't try enough quarterbacks until you have one. So I would be talking out of both sides of my mouth if I said that's too much for them. The trick is they have to pick up his fifth year option by May 3rd. And it's interesting. I think they're expected to do so. Maybe that would change if a certain quarterback falls to them in the draft. I'm not totally ruling that out right now. But if they do pick up the option, it's guaranteed. The rules have changed. I don't know if a lot of fans know that, where it's fully guaranteed. And that means he is signed, you know, to 2022 for $19 million. And so that's a pretty big commitment for Sam Darnold without really seeing him on the field for your team.
Carolina picks eighth. You wouldn't rule out selecting a quarterback there, to your point, if one actually ends up still being available that they happen to like?
No, I wouldn't.
Imagine that.
I've talked to people about this, and there's a lot of theories and there's different reporting. You never know what to believe at this time of year, but I do think that they had their eye on Mac Jones and that they might still have their eye on Mac Jones. They coached him in the Senior Bowl. He fits the type of quarterback that Matt Rhule likes. To me, he's kind of like, you know, the Teddy Bridgewater of this class. He's the point guard. He's the distributor. You know, they got to know him really well, and they were sitting there at eight, and the 49ers move up to three, and everyone thinks they're taking Mac Jones. And between that move and then Stafford not going to Carolina, because remember, they offered that number 8 overall pick for Stafford a month ago. And Watson, who they were rumored to be interested in, that's not going to happen now. I think they can't possibly know for sure what the 49ers are going to do, but I think they wanted another option, and they probably expect their guy, Mac Jones, to go to San Francisco at number 3.
Is Mac Jones being a top 3 pick the biggest surprise, the biggest development of the draft in 2021, and maybe for some period of time now?
Yeah, if it happens, yeah. I mean, it's very similar to Daniel Jones going 6. It's not too different. No, I don't think it's – I think a couple quarterbacks seem to get pushed up way higher than you thought almost every year. You know, going back to when Jake Locker and Christian Ponder and
all these guys
– right, you know, when they go in the top 10, or when who was it? Bortles going number 3. Like, it happens. It just happens to be Mac Jones, a guy that everyone watches and has opinions on. I don't have a super hot take. But I also want to see it happen before I kill the 49ers or, right, like, have an opinion. Like, maybe it's not going to happen. Maybe they're going to take Justin Fields. I don't really know.
But there's – and Greg Rosenthal from the NFL Network is joining us on Extra 1360, though. Greg, there is one thing, though, that I and one factor I think that's way different. Because I know a lot of you guys in the NFL media – and well, I shouldn't say you guys. I don't want to lump you in with like Brinson, because like Brinson hates Dave Gettleman.
Please don't.
You know what I mean? Like he crushes Gettleman every chance he can. And some of this comes obviously from having been in Carolina. But Dave Gettleman is very much a target for a lot of NFL media. So it's easy to pick on Danny Dimes as a surprise selection because it's Gettleman and whoever the coach was at the time. Like nobody really seemed to care for what it was and how it was that the Giants were built. That said, I feel people feel differently about John Lynch and people feel differently about Kyle Shanahan. So to me, if it ends up being Mac Jones, even this conversation now makes everybody think about Mac Jones just a little bit differently because it's Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, don't you think?
I completely agree. I mean, Shanahan, again, we have to see if he does it. I don't know. I look at Justin Fields and I think, man, are they really going to pass it? And I'm like, well, we'll see. Maybe Kyle Shanahan will want this guy and he's pulling an okey-doke. But you're right about how I think the league views Mac Jones was different than a lot of the draft nicks and the draft analysts did. And so we'll see who's right. But, you know, you tend to trust the professionals on some level. I heard whispers Bill Belichick liked Mac Jones a lot. So it's like Matt Rhule likes him, Kyle Shanahan likes him. That's a lot of, you know, Bill Belichick likes him. That's a lot of smart people that like them. And heck, his teammates, for what it's worth, you know, seem to love him. It's not like he's, like, got a pop gun arm. He doesn't have a great, like, athletic body. And he's not fast. But he throws the ball deep pretty well. You know, he moves pretty well in the pocket. I don't think he's, like, a crazy, crazy first-round pick. It's just surprising he's a top three pick.
Right, right. If Dave Gettleman liked him, it would be a much different conversation than Kyle Shanahan liking him, right? Like, why
doesn't that's a good point.
I know you can't speak for your entire genre here, but why do so many people not like Dave Gettleman?
I think because he built he's building the Giants. He did it with the Panthers pretty successfully too. In this like 1980s, we're going to be the big tough ground and pound team. We want big physical guys and we want run stoppers on defense. We want big 350 pound guys. And he made a crack about analytics. That's really it. He made a crack about not understanding computers and analytics. And then everyone got all fired up.
All right, good. I'm glad on that back.
We're all a bunch of dorks.
Just a bunch of groupthink here. I get it. I understand. Greg Rosenthal is joining us. You said that, you know, the draft stuff, you leave that to the draft experts to analyze these guys coming out of college, making the jump into the pros. But what Greg is good at is analyzing and evaluating needs for teams. In your opinion, does San Francisco need a quarterback?
Yeah, they do. I'm not sold on Garoppolo as like the guy to take you to the next level. I think they believe they're in an okay spot with him. I tend to agree. I think he's a league average quarterback. I mean, you were 10 minutes away from winning the Super Bowl with a lot of good things going on around him. And so if they had struck out and not been able to get a quarterback this offseason, or they want to, you know, have Mac Jones or whoever it is start the season on the bench, okay. I mean, that's worked for some really good quarterbacks. I don't think that's a huge deal. Shanahan's good at coaching these guys up. Garoppolo's never been like a great fit with him, it doesn't seem. But he's okay. He just has to stay healthy.
Cincinnati's at 5. What does Cincinnati need most, in your opinion, here, having just spent the number one overall pick on Joe Burrow last year?
I mean, the easy answer is tackle. But they just took a left tackle. Just play okay, Jonah Williams, you know, in the top 10 2 years ago. You know, so I think they need offensive line more than anything, and so you could have two top tier tackles. To me, that'd be the way to go in terms of what you need badly. But whether you're evaluating, you know, Sewell, who would be the guy most people would expect there, versus some of these playmakers that are just really exciting, Jamar Chase and Kyle Pitts being, you know, the two probably that stand out. I mean, I wouldn't fault them either way because I like the guys who are around Burrow already. T. Higgins is a good player. You know, Tate is a good player. I'm forgetting the name of their slot receiver who puts up 1,100 yards every season. It's like they have a lot to work with. Joe Mixon's a good running back. And, man, they would be loaded suddenly if they had another big-time playmaker. So that's like the sexier, more fun pick. But the tackle probably is the more logical one.
Right. I mean, how good does a tight end have to be considered with the 5th overall pick?
You hear about Kyle Pitts that, you know, although you feel like you hear this, okay, like more at tight end than other positions, that he's like the best tight end prospect to come out in, you know, 10 years or whatever it is. Like you hear that. It's possible. He's explosive.
Well, this is following in the trend of Tony Gonzalez into Antonio Gates into Kelsey, right? I mean, if you get that guy at 5, then by all means, it's all worth it. Forget tradition. Toss that out the window.
Right, and just watching him play, I mean, yeah, he's a tight end, and it's sort of in between, you know, tight end and receiver. I mean, he runs like a wide receiver, that's for sure. You're not drafting him to block, so he's somewhere between a wide receiver and like a monster slot, and it's great. I mean, it can totally change your offense. I mean, that's It's one of the reasons why the Bucks are still paying Rob Gronkowski $9-10 million a year, where he played like more snaps than almost any tight end in the entire NFL last year, because he changes your playbook. He just opens up so many different things that you can do and makes it tough, not just for him, but he's almost like a basketball player that opens up matchups for guys around him. And so that's what a guy like Kyle Pitts could do too.
Greg Rosenthal is joining us. Your thoughts on another passive aggressive offseason between Aaron Rodgers and the Packers?
That's good. I don't know. I'm enjoying it. I like the Jeopardy thing. I mean, I like him just like in the moment. That was a live broadcast, him rolling with some guy who has since admitted, by the way, I don't know if you saw this, the Jeopardy contestant who made the answer,
right,
asking why they kicked the field goal, he's admitted that he had bet on the Packers in this game, and that's why he was thinking about it. You
know? Oh, wow. Okay, good for him that he got to play that out there and alert the world to the fact that he made that wager on television with Aaron Rodgers standing right in front of him. What are the odds of that?
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. He didn't mention the bet or anything on TV. But an enterprising reporter, I think it was Matt Schneiderman, give me some credit, found this guy, called him up, and he said, "Yeah, because they just guessed." He just guessed. He was like, "I bet that guy bet on the Packers." And I love it. You know, Rodgers he's like a made man. I mean, he's the coolest guy in the room. He just won another MVP. He's great. He knows he's got the Packers over a barrel, and he's just being honest. We ask our athletes to be honest, and I think he's using these answers and being honest to get a little more money. They guarantee him some more money into 2022, I believe it would be, if they add another year of guaranteed money. I think he'll be happy, and that's probably what'll happen, I think, in July, sometime like that.
Yeah, I kind of dig it as well, that they just, you know, hey, we'll draft a quarterback, I'll go on a podcast, I'll go host Jeopardy, I'll tell the world that I wanted to host Jeopardy in addition to being a quarterback in the league, and then we all wonder why it was that the Packers drafted a quarterback in the first round, right? Like, it's sort of, it's this fun merry-go-round between him and the team.
I really laugh at I've seen some bad hot takes, and maybe on our network too, of like, well, you know, it's going to take a lot of time away from him, you know, his study, you know, you got to be worried. It's like, you're telling me that you know, Rodgers or the late great Alex Trebek is really putting in that much mental energy into banging out five shows a day for like a week and then having a month off or whatever it is. Like, I think Aaron Rodgers can handle it. He seems to be able to handle
it. Well, man, if you're not in your playbook at all times, you're not doing it right. We've all learned that lesson as well.
He doesn't have to write the questions. I mean, it's not like he's... it's not that hard.
Although knowing Aaron Rodgers, he might want to.
Right. I mean, he's all about it too. I mean, he's selling himself. I think that's why he's doing so much press. Is he basically said it. He wants the ratings for these 2 weeks to like be better than normal so that they'll hire him. I like that. You know, I used to hire at the NFL. And it's like, I like, you know, you like the people who, without being over confident about it, like made it clear how badly they wanted the job. He badly wants the job.
Who'd you hire?
Well, I used to, you know, hire a lot of the people in our newsroom, our writers, you know, desk editors, all sorts of people. Hmm. Come on.
Did you hire Daniel Jeremiah?
No, I mean, that's way above. Please.
Did you hire anybody whose name we would know?
Sure, a lot of people. The late, great Chris Wesseling, one of my closest friends, bringing him from Los Angeles. Evan Silva. People you would maybe know more at Roto-World, but Evan Silva and Adam Levitan, who's done great work.
Would you hire Will Brinson?
No. I mean, he seems like a locker room problem. You know what I mean? Like, talented, but...
I had a question about Deshaun Watson, but I don't really want to end on that note because this has been a fun conversation. So we'll save that for somewhere down the road. Thank you, Greg.
All right. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you. Greg Rosenthal, everybody, of the NFL Network and NFL.com, and a guy who's a very, very talented broadcaster, a funny guy, sharp, good wit, podcaster, has a lot going for him here, that Greg Rosenthal.